If you stop right now and picture silver, what flashes through your mind? Is it a beautiful piece of jewelry, maybe a stack of shiny bullion coins, or perhaps you just see it as a financial commodity, something to hedge inflation?
Sure, that's the traditional view for most people.
For most of us, yeah, that's where the story of silver ends. But the script has been completely rewritten. What if I told you that the US government, in 2025, declared silver a matter of national security, managing it like, I don't know, petroleum or uranium?
It's a startling thought, isn't it?
It is. Welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is to unpack this exact policy move, the official addition of silver to the US critical minerals list. This is a massive strategic designation, and we really need to understand what triggered it. You know, what specific modern uses make it so critical, where the supply risks lie, and most importantly, what real-world policy shifts are now in motion.
That shift in perception is absolutely the core of this discussion. You've hit the nail on the head. Historically, silver has been categorized as a precious metal, a store of wealth. But that classification simply, it ignored its essential industrial function. The critical mineral designation officially recognizes silver for what it is today, a foundational, functional material that is indispensable to modern infrastructure, energy, and defense systems. We are, in effect, moving silver out of the vault and into the factory.
Okay, so let's start there. From the vault to the factory.
So let's start with the list itself. The U.S. Critical Minerals List isn't just an inventory, not at all. It's a strategic government tool designed specifically to identify minerals vital to the country's security, its economy, and its supply chain resilience.
So if a mineral makes the list, that's a huge signal.
It's a huge signal. It means the federal government must dedicate resources to secure its domestic supply and mitigate foreign threats. And silver was kept off this list for decades, precisely because of that high profile as a precious metal.
It was sort of hiding in plain sight.
Exactly. But recent comprehensive assessments, driven largely by the accelerating pace of the energy transition, forced a reevaluation based on three strict criteria.
Okay, what are they?
First, demonstrated supply risk. We are simply not extracting or processing enough globally to meet surging technical demand without stress. Second, our substantial import reliance, which I know we'll get into later, means we are dependent on others. And the final tipping point, its absolute non-substitutable indispensability to specific technological applications.
That last point feels crucial. I mean, if silver were still just primarily used for flatware and coins, it wouldn't make the list, right?
Not a chance.
The inclusion proves that policymakers view silver's vulnerability to global supply disruption as a direct threat to the functionality of the US economy. It confirms its status as a technological metal, not just a financial one.
Precisely.
So, okay, if supply risk and import reliance push the needle, we need to know what concrete technological use tipped the scales. Where exactly is this critical silver actually going that makes its security so paramount?
That's the billion-dollar question.
The key to silver's strategic importance is its conductivity, right?
That's it.
It has the highest electrical and thermal conductivity of any metal, and that single property makes it utterly indispensable to any technology where moving electrons efficiently is the name of the game.
The absolute best in class.
And right now, the biggest game in town is the green energy transition. Let's take solar power. Silver is a core component in solar photovoltaic cells, or PV cells. Without that silver paste they apply to the silicon wafers, the solar panel just can't efficiently collect and transfer the electricity it generates.
And this is where the sheer scale becomes astonishing. The solar industry is already the largest industrial consumer of silver, and that demand is just skyrocketing.
Really, the largest.
The largest. And consider this surprising fact. A modern utility-scale solar farm can require an average of 3,000 to 4,000 ounces of silver per megawatt of installation.
Wow, per megawatt.
Per megawatt. And we are building gigawatts of new capacity every single year.
That's a huge concentrated demand focus. I mean, we're talking about tons and tons of metal annually just for solar infrastructure.
Exactly. And the demand doesn't stop there. Look at electric vehicles, EVs. An EV uses far more silver, up to double the amount, than a traditional internal combustion engine vehicle.
Double. Why is that? Is it the battery?
It's a great question. It's actually not the battery itself, but all the sophisticated electronics, the power systems, connection points, and safety fuses required to manage all those high currents. As cars become computers on wheels, their demand for silver accelerates.
Okay, that makes sense. And then we shift from green energy to defense and digital infrastructure. Silver is essential for semiconductors, which, you know, power everything from your phone to advanced weaponry.
Correct. When we discuss national security assets, we are talking about radar systems, guidance electronics, specialized batteries, and critical communication devices. They all rely on silver's performance in these very precise applications.
And you can't just swap it out for something else.
Not easily. If supply were cut, the U.S. couldn't just swap in copper or gold. The performance compromise would be significant, if not catastrophic, for specific military and civilian infrastructure uses.
So that breadth of use, from the solar panel on your roof to the microchip in a defense system, that's really what transforms silver into a strategic liability if the supply is threatened.
That's the aha moment.
It means a disruption isn't just an inconvenience. It hits multiple vital national interests all at the same time.
Simultaneously, yeah.
So let's look at the threat itself, because you mentioned import reliance was one of the three key criteria. Where does the U.S. actually stand in terms of self-sufficiency?
Well, the numbers are stark, and they are the primary reason for this policy move. The U.S. domestic supply meets only a tiny fraction of our national requirement. We source approximately 70% of our total demand from imports. 70%. It places us in a highly dependent position for a material now deemed non-substitutable for critical technology.
Okay, so where are we getting it from?
Our major suppliers are Mexico, Canada, and Peru. Now, while Mexico and Peru are the dominant sources of the mined metal,
which are friendly for the most part.
For the most part, yes. But relying on any foreign source, even friendly ones, exposes us to labor disputes, resource nationalism, political instability, and simple logistical risks, all factors outside direct U.S. control.
Right. But the threat isn't just where the silver comes out of the ground. You mentioned something equally concerning, the processing choke point. Can you elaborate on why control over refining is such a strategic danger?
This is perhaps the more insidious risk. This is the one that keeps people up at night. Silver refining and processing, so turning raw ore concentrate into usable, high-purity industrial metal, is heavily concentrated overseas.
And by overseas, where are we talking about specifically?
Specifically, global processing capacity is heavily centralized in regions that are considered geopolitical competitors, including China.
Okay, and why is that so dangerous?
Because control over refining capacity allows a country to influence global supply and pricing regardless of where the metal is mined. It creates a powerful non-mining choke point.
I see.
If a major processing nation decided to halt exports of refined silver, it would cripple industrial supply chains worldwide, literally overnight.
Even if the mines in Mexico or Peru kept running?
Even if the mines kept running at full capacity, the raw material would have nowhere to go to become useful.
That makes perfect sense. So if we have this huge 70% reliance, and the material is critical, why can't the government just mandate or, you know, incentivize a rapid expansion of domestic mining to ease this reliance? Why is it so complicated to increase our own supply?
That raises a fantastic point, and it hits on a major domestic challenge. Even with a critical designation, efforts to reduce import reliance are complicated by two major internal factors. First, environmental regulations are, of course, crucial, yet they significantly increase the complexity and timeline for new mine permitting.
How long are we talking?
The process can take well over a decade, sometimes longer, which, you know, doesn't address the urgent security need we're facing right now.
Not at all. And the second factor?
The second is that domestic ore grades are often lower than in the past, making the extraction process less economically viable without substantial government support or major technological breakthroughs.
So it's slow and expensive.
So the government recognized that simply waiting for new domestic mines wasn't a secure short-term strategy. This realization is what necessitated the policy lever of the critical mineral designation itself.
And here's where the action starts. You have this massive 70% reliance coupled with this critical need. How does the government use this status, this brand new policy lever, to try and mitigate that risk? What tangible changes happen on the ground when silver is added to that list?
This is where it gets really interesting. The designation unlocks several powerful federal support mechanisms. They're designed to insulate the country from immediate and long-term supply risks. The most immediate impact is on project development, new mine exploration, processing facilities, domestic recycling initiatives focused on silver. They may now benefit from accelerated permitting processes and reduced bureaucratic hurdles.
So it doesn't bypass the laws?
Not at all. It doesn't mean bypassing environmental laws, but it allows for much faster interagency coordination, basically treating these projects as strategically vital to the nation's economic security.
So the federal government is basically signaling that if you are developing silver processing capacity in the U.S., you get the express lane treatment.
Precisely. That's a perfect way to put it. Furthermore, this status attracts targeted federal funding. We are seeing programs designed to secure supply chains, enabling government entities through agencies like the Department of Defense to begin building strategic reserves or stockpiles of refined silver.
Like the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, but for silver.
It's the same concept. It acts as an insurance policy, buffering the U.S. industrial base against any sudden supply shock from abroad.
We also need to talk about trade scrutiny, which you mentioned briefly. We're used to tariffs on, you know, consumer goods, but how does the critical mineral status change how silver is handled in international trade?
This is a huge change. Silver now falls under the intense scrutiny of trade policies tied directly to national security. The most prominent mechanism for this is the use of Section 232 investigations.
Okay, can you just clarify for us what that is?
Sure. Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act allows the Commerce Department to investigate whether the import of any specific material threatens national security. If that threat is confirmed, and given the essential role of silver in defense and energy tech, it likely would be, it enables the president to impose tariffs or quotas on those imports.
Wow.
This is a powerful, national security-driven tool that silver, as a mere investment metal, never had to worry about before.
That is a massive shift, moving silver from an open commodity market to a heavily managed national resource flow.
It is. And beyond government actions, the designation fundamentally changes the industrial landscape. Mining companies, refiners, technology manufacturers, they all adjust their exploration and production strategies to align with these new national priorities.
The private sector follows the government's lead.
Exactly. When the government signals that a material is critical, private capital follows. It catalyzes changes in supply dynamics that otherwise would have taken decades. We saw this exact pattern play out with lithium and rare earth elements over the last few years.
That heavy focus on securing domestic supply, whether through new mines or trade controls, brings us right back to that central tension you mentioned earlier, security versus sustainability. The government doesn't just need more silver, it needs responsibly sourced silver to align with its broader environmental goals, especially since silver is a core component of the whole green energy push.
Absolutely. The tension is real, and is why the policy isn't solely focused on, you know, just digging new holes in the ground. A significant part of the new strategy involves fostering a circular economy for silver within the U.S.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
It means growing interest and substantial investment in technologies designed to enhance silver recovery from secondary sources. This includes recycling electronics, of course, but it also focuses heavily on processing historical sources that were previously ignored or just deemed uneconomical.
Can you give us a concrete example of those secondary sources? What are we talking about?
Certainly. We are talking specifically about targeting mine waste and tailings.
Tailings?
Yeah, the leftover material from decades of mining activity right here within the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Regions in the western U.S., like historical mining districts in Nevada or Colorado, have massive amounts of processed waste material that still contain recoverable silver, often alongside other valuable minerals.
So wait, if we can extract valuable silver from material that was already discarded, we are essentially accessing a substantial domestic supply stream without the immense environmental impact and permitting delays of opening brand new mines.
Exactly. That's the holy grail, in a way. Yeah. These advances support sustainable mining practices, they minimize the ecological footprint of mineral extraction, and they align perfectly with our environmental objectives.
So it's a much more sophisticated approach.
It is. It's about meeting the soaring demand for silver, the backbone of solar and EVs, while adhering to commitments for cleaner, more transparent sourcing.
So bringing it all together, what does this all mean?
The elevation of silver to critical mineral status is more than just a bureaucratic update. It marks a formal policy acknowledgement of its essential and non-substitutable role in technology, national security, and economic resilience.
So it's really the end of an era.
It is the definitive end of silver's time as merely a precious commodity. It cements its identity as a vital industrial asset. And understanding these supply dynamics, the policy mechanisms now in place, and the technological dependencies is just crucial for appreciating silver's evolving position in the global industrial landscape, and really how central it is to our future stability and technological advancement.
And here is a final provocative thought for you to mull over. While silver is now recognized as absolutely key to supporting the global green energy transition, The very act of declaring it a critical national security mineral highlights this ongoing strategic challenge. That challenge is balancing the urgent, immediate need for supply security against the essential, long-term goal of achieving truly sustainable and transparent sourcing practices globally. That tension, security versus sustainability, is something that will define the industrial materials discussion for the next decade. And it will surface every time silver is mentioned in the news, next time you are reading a report on global economics or green technology.